The future of recording now.
This is Concordia News Radio.
Good morning. It's turning minus 5 degrees and sunny in Montreal. I'm Michelle Malmasi, and here are today's headlines. Much of Quebec is turning into an orange zone today. We'll have a story on how this is affecting skiers. 1 month of Black History, it just isn't enough. Concordia's Black Student Union says it should be Black History Year. And we'll check out the St. Henry Coffee Supermarket, where companies can roast their own coffee. The latest COVID-19 numbers have just been released by the Quebec government. The province has now lost over 10,400 lives over the course of the pandemic. However, not a single COVID-related death was reported yesterday. Over the past 24 hours, more than 570 new cases were confirmed. That brings the total number of cases close to 294,000. Over 15,200 people were also vaccinated, bringing the total to over 564,000 vaccinated Quebecers. Starting today, residents of the Maman-Nid Geriatric Center in Kosenlik will be receiving their second dose of the Pfizer vaccine. They were among the first wave of Quebecers who were vaccinated on December 14th of last year. Originally, residents were intended to receive their second dose 21 days after their first. Hansine Dupuis is the deputy CEO of the CIUSSS du Centre-Ouest de l'Île de Montréal. Dupuis says second doses will now be given within the 4 months of the first. Starting today, curfew has been pushed back to 9:30 p.m. for zones transitioning into orange. The Montreal region will be remaining in the red zone. For those in an orange zone, some changes include restaurants opening with a max of 2 people per table along with their children. Places of worship, gyms, cinemas, and museums are open as well. Starting next Monday, extracurricular activities and school sports will continue throughout the province. Skiing is one outdoor activity that is authorized by public health officials in Quebec. Now that most of Quebec is moving to an orange zone, skiers are wondering how this will affect the rest of the ski season. Our reporter Gabrielle Zambito reports. Hi Gabrielle, what can you tell us about this?
Hi Michelle. So the transition into an orange zone has everything to do with the curfew. Most ski hills are located outside of the greater Montreal area, meaning that the curfew for them will be changing to 9:30 p.m. as of today. Technically, ski mountains can extend their hours and allow dine-in restaurants. I spoke to Hélène Bélisle from Ski Bromont, and she says that most of their clients are coming from red zones such as Montreal. For this reason, she says that the protocols will stay the same. As for what that protocol is, the big thing is making sure that skiers are always wearing their masks and maintaining a 2-meter distance. Skiing naturally has this social distancing aspect to it, except for parts such as indoor chalets, ski shops, indoor restaurants, and chairlifts. These indoor sections are closed off to the public and are strictly reserved for skiers who need to warm up. They also have a team making sure that everyone's following protocols. As for the chairlifts, they are making sure that a 2-meter distance is maintained, so the chairlifts will be moving at a half capacity rate.
How are skiers feeling about these changes? Do they feel safe?
Belisle says yes. She says that Ski Bromont has sent out a survey to their clients and they've got a very positive feedback. They say that clients that don't feel safe, they simply won't be returning this year, and that is up to them. Costa Vaccarino is a skier who skied a lot during this pandemic, and he thinks that some mountains are better at enforcing the COVID protocols than others.
So I think that at certain mountains, they should enforce mask wearing, especially when you're in public places such as a ski lift or just waiting to buy your tickets. All in all, I feel safe just because you're in an outdoor space, but at the same time, I just think that ski hills and the people working there should try and enforce as much as possible.
Overall, Bromont has seen a huge spike in skiers buying passes throughout this pandemic winter. They've also seen an increase in regular skiers. But Belisle says that this is the first time that they've ever had to limit the sale of ski passes so that lineups aren't too long, so that they can maintain a 2-meter distance, since chairlifts are running at half a capacity.
Thank you, Gabrielle. That was our reporter, Gabrielle Zambito. Texas is lifting all of its COVID-related restrictions this Wednesday across the entire state. Businesses will start operating at 100% capacity, and Texans will no longer be required to wear a mask by law. Our reporter Bogdan Litvinenko has more.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced that the state will return to pre-COVID reality on March 10th. This change includes the reopening of concert venues and mass sporting events. The governor is still encouraging his fellow Texans to follow all health guidelines, but he believes that people, quote, no longer need government running their lives. Concordia student Gabriela Villaruel has senior relatives living in Texas. They are considering relocating to Canada during the pandemic as they feel unsafe in their home state.
I find it really shocking because I have elderly relatives in Texas right now, and their age group is the most vulnerable to contracting COVID. So when they take away these restrictions, it's going to be really scary. I mean, a lot of people in Texas were already so opposed to wearing masks, but now the law supports them. We've even considered bringing them back to Canada because we just think they'd feel safer here, and I'm genuinely worried about my relatives.
Texas currently ranks 47th out of the 50 states in per capita vaccine distribution. So far, only a fifth of its population has received the first dose of the COVID vaccine. Houston, the largest city in Texas, became the first American city to record all the dangerous types of COVID variants. The director of Montreal's first post-COVID clinic, Dr. Emilia Liana Falcone, says that variants should be taken seriously even as vaccination rates increase.
You know, there's always that question, well, how well will the vaccine, protect from reinfection, especially in the setting of variants? So I think that research and time will tell. There could be that possibility that there still be some reinfection. We just don't know. I mean, but so far it seems like the vaccines that are currently available seem to be effective. There's always that question of the variants, though, and I think that's what really needs further investigation.
Although Texas has recently experienced a drop in daily COVID cases, federal health officials believe this false sense of security will soon lead to a new wave of COVID-19 in the state. For Concordia News, I'm Bogdan Litvinenko.
Since September, Seattle public schools have been fully remote for all K-12 students. While many parents have been advocating for transition into hybrid learning, others have pushed back due to concerns for teachers' health. But last week, Washington State Governor Jay Inslee granted teachers and licensed children care workers immediate access to the COVID-19 vaccine. With this news, the Seattle Public School Board has announced that they will begin transitioning into hybrid model learning for K-5 this week. Anna Justin has more on the story.
With elementary schools on track to begin reopening their doors, many older students are eager to see if the school board will extend these measures onto high schools. Emmeline Beatty is a senior at Ingram High School in Seattle. Like the rest of the seniors in the city, she has not attended a single day of in-person classes. She says she has had a difficult year struggling with her mental health in isolation. At this point, though, her attitude towards online school is resigned more than anything.
Well, at first, I think it was really horrible, obviously. Just missing the, classic things like my senior homecoming, my senior year of cheerleading. But honestly, at this point, having been quarantined for a year, I'm I guess just kind of used to the fact, and I would be scared to just go straight back into school. So I'm not too mad about it anymore.
On the other hand, high schoolers in Montreal have been attending hybrid classes since October. Montrealer Camille Dussault is in her final year at Collège du Rocher Saint-Lambert. She says that there still aren't enough activities for seniors, and nothing could compare to a true COVID-free final high school year. Ultimately, both Beatty and Dussault just hope to have some final celebration with their class.
Honestly, at this point, I would do anything and follow any measures just to have a prom. I don't even know if I can buy a dress right now because I don't know if we'll have a prom, but I've been looking forward to buying a dress since I was in my first year of high school. So now it sucks.
For Concordia News, I'm Anna Justin.
Today is International Women's Day. It was first celebrated on February 28th, 1909 to commemorate the 1908 garment workers' strike in New York. the demonstrators were demanding better working conditions. The U.S. and other European countries began to commemorate International Women's Day on March 19th in 1911. Among other things, they were fighting for the right to vote, to hold public office, and to stop workplace discrimination. Today, more than ever, it is important to highlight organizations such as Chez Doris, a Montreal-based women's shelter, who do the necessary work to help support disadvantaged women. Since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, Chez Doris has received more clients who are homeless and needing assistance. To accommodate this need, they have increased their hours of service. Originally, they were open for 6.5 hours a day, but as of December 1st of last year, they have been offering 24-hour support. This service was intended to end at the end of the month, but according to an article in the Montreal Gazette, it will most likely be extended until June. There's a new opportunity for Montreal coffee lovers to learn more about the city's local roasters and the coffee industry in Montreal. Evan Lindsay has the story.
The Dreamy Coffee Supermarket is located across the Lachine Canal in St. Henry. It's based out of what is known as the Canadian Roasting Society, which is a co-op roasting space. Companies rent time on the Roasting Society's machines and can use the space to develop their product and brand. The beans are then sold out of Dreamy just a few feet from where they are roasted. Each week, Dreamy features a new batch of beans for customers to pick off their wall and a brand new cafe menu.
I was like, we have to open a cafe because it's going to be such an eclectic menu, you know, and I can tap everybody in here and say, why don't you guys offer us some new stuff every week, and we can bring to people such an intense rotation that you could walk in here every week, it'll never be the same coffee.
That was Andy Kears, the founder of the Dreamy Coffee Supermarket and the Canadian Roasting Society. For Kears, the future of the cafe is making it a place for people to learn everything about coffee, from production to consumption.
The thing we're trying to make people aware of is that there is a lot going on in coffee. It's almost like saying people that drink the same coffee every day, it's like eating the same food every day,
yeah,
or buying the same bottle of wine every day. It's like, don't you want to try something new? Sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's good, but that's kind of part of it, the adventure. Yeah.
Because the Canada Roasting Society is the core of Kier's business, it gives him the freedom to close and open Dreamy as he pleases. It's a method that seems to be improving business.
I find every time we close and open, we will just reach a new level of volume. Like, coffee, the only way coffee makes sense is by volume. Like, it's a convenient, volume-based business.
The Dreamy Coffee Supermarket is open every weekend in St. Henry. For Concordia News Montreal, I'm Evan Lindsay.
Black History Month typically lasts 1 month, the month of February. But Concordia's union has declared this year Black History Year. Juliette Palais is here with more. Hi, Juliette. So tell me more about Black History Year. What is the BSU saying?
Hi, Michelle. When you go onto the Instagram page, you see these posts saying, backed by popular demand, we decided to extend Black History Month into Black History Year. You're welcome. The point that's being made here is that Black history needs more than 1 month and we need to continue to educate ourselves. When I talked to Tanuba, the co-founder of the BSU, she said to me that Black History Month should be celebrated every month, every day, every hour, because there should be appreciation for Black art, people, history all throughout the year, not just specific to February. And this year's political climate has really brought a lot of attention to the Black Lives Matter movement, as we've seen with so many protests and demonstrations calling for defunding of the police. Because of that, there has been an emphasis of Black history or the lack thereof. And so the BSU is committing to highlighting Black history and Black historical figures throughout the year.
So how has the BSU highlighted Black history over the past month?
That's a good question. So in the original post, they pressed that we must celebrate Black history all year round. And so throughout this month, they have been highlighting important Black figures on social media with small blurbs kind of describing what they did in their lives and what impact they had. They've also had a lot of guest speakers on, such as Kelsey Walker, an activist for the Black Lives Matter movement, to talk about, for example, whether or not Black hair products are essential products. So these talks are recorded on Instagram Live or on IGTV, and you can always go back and see them. And I hope to see more of them personally throughout the year. They are very educative and very interesting. They also do talks about Canadian Black history and how universities don't support students, and a specific incident at Concordia where a guest lecturer said the N-word in class. So basically, they're major advocates for Black students at Concordia and educating Montrealers about Black history.
How is the Black Student Union advertising or promoting Black History Year?
So they're doing a couple things to get the word out there. So mainly there's a hashtag to spread the word. So hashtag Black History Year. And so they're encouraging their followers to use that. They're also pushing their followers to share and post actively some of the BSU's posts, either on their story or on their own page, in order to educate themselves and others. And at the end of the day, it's the individual's job to educate themselves and not the Black Student Union. So we have to all individually do our part for Black History Year.
Thanks, Juliet.
Thank you, Michelle.
That was our reporter, Juliet Fale. That's your news to 11:46. Thanks for listening. For Concordia News, I'm Michelle Marmas.